Welcome back to Equal Time. I'm Carl Etnayer. For the second half of today's show, we're going to be talking with George Schenk, who's come down to the studio from Waitsfield. He's a founder and CEO of American Flatbread. He's going to talk about creating a new legal framework for Vermont food. George, welcome to Equal Time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, I mean, I'm sure almost all of our listeners know what American Flatbread is. They see it in the store when they go to buy food and probably been to a restaurant. But why don't you tell us, for the sake of the few people from out of state who are traveling through and listening to DEV in the car?
Well, the short version is it's an all-natural pizza baked in a primitive wood-fired clay oven. We do it in a restaurant format on Friday and Saturday evenings in Waitsfield and Middlebury, and then Monday through Thursday we use the same facility to make a product that we wholesale into grocery stores that is distributed in the eastern half of the country.
And now you have a restaurant in Burlington as well, correct?
And we have a licensed restaurant in Burlington, and we also have one down in Ashburn, Virginia, and there's a couple of on the drawing board.
All right, so you're going national with this.
Yeah, well, we're going somewhere.
Going up and down the East Coast, in any case. Well, we were talking last week with Robin McDermott a little bit about the cost of local food, and she was talking about how to eat on a low budget, low on the hog, and sometimes literally low on the hog by getting the cheap cuts. Yeah. And I guess that high on the hog, that the term came from the prime cuts being way up high where the muscles weren't used all that much and more tender
right,
meat.
The loin.
Right, exactly. So she was talking about how to save money by eating locally. And we got some calls from people who say, look, I go to my store and I find that the local things cost a lot more than similar things brought in from California. I'm wondering why that was, how it could be changed. And then in today's New York Times, I find, I'll read a little bit of this, Nancy Childs, she's a professor of food marketing at St. Joseph's University, which is in Philadelphia. She worries that some of the food activists' recommendations for buying fresh, local, or organic food cannot be adopted by many Americans because those foods may be too expensive. And she says, by singling out certain lifestyles and foods, it's diminishing very good quality nutrition sources. Frozen goods, canned goods, they are not bad things. What's important is that people eat well, within their means. And she concludes, we'd all love to live on a farm in Vermont, right? What are your comments on that?
Well, I mean, I think this has been one of the central criticisms or concerns about the local and regional organic food movement is that, yeah, it's great, but it does appear to be more expensive. And I think that it's more expensive when we think of it in conventional ways. And I think the trick here is to reimagine how we construct our meals. For example, that in a conventional restaurant, if you order a chicken, what you generally expect is a half a chicken or at least the whole breast. And I was talking with a restaurateur who was saying that he was having a difficult time using local chickens because they were inconsistent in size. And it's pretty expensive to buy a local chicken and to have to give somebody a half of it. And what happens is that you can actually sort of redo that. Instead of having the big piece of protein in the middle of the plate, is to make different kinds of meals, maybe more like a chicken stew, that are absolutely delicious, really nutritious, and much more cost-effective. There have been some people in the Metro Valley with their locavore group that have thoughtfully monitored their food purchases and the expenses associated with that. And what they discovered was that it actually wasn't more expensive, that they were getting more yield out of local and regional foods because maybe the individual piece or per pound it was more, they tend to waste less. It tended to have a longer shelf life because it was fresher. Mm-hmm. They tended to be more thoughtful about how it was being used. So I think that the way we got forward here is to kind of reimagine how we feed one another and how we prepare our meals. I think the second part to it is that and a good example is that the Vermont Land Trust has been actively involved in conserving the Kingsbury Farm in Warren, Vermont. And the Kingsbury Farm is going to be bought by the Vermont Food Bank. And there the intention is to grow good local organic vegetables for people who historically have not been able to afford those kinds of vegetables and fruits and maybe even meats. FoodWorks in Montpelier is already participating with the food bank in getting foodstuffs to the food bank, both through growing and selling to the food bank and also through a gleaning project. I'm on the board of the Vermont Food Bank, and for a long time, we simply asked the question is how many pounds of food were we getting through the door and getting out to needy people. Increasingly, we are now asking, what is the quality and character of that food? Where does it come from? Understanding that our relationship with Vermont farmers and with our land, with a sense of sustainability, is also relevant to this story and also to the nutritional value of the foods. So I really think that there is an opportunity to do this better, better for the Vermont environment, better for Vermont farmers, better for people who historically have not been able to afford it. And I would say finally that mass-produced food that appears to be inexpensive is a kind of Faustian bargain that we put at risk, in my judgment, some fundamentals of human health. And that certainly is a kind of hidden cost to the mass-produced kind of chemically saturated foodstuffs that are so typical and so inexpensive. The other part to that storyline of hyper inexpensive food is what did it mean to the people who did the farming, to that did the harvesting, and do we have any responsibility or a social contract with our greater community as we explore the implications of our purchases both in food and outside of food?
We're talking with George Schenk. He is the founder and CEO of American Flatbread. If you'd like to join the conversation, the local number is 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. I'm fascinated by this experiment in the Mad River Valley that you were describing, where people were keeping close track of their food purchases. I'm used to the concept on the energy side of things, that through Efficiency Vermont, yes, we pay a tiny fraction more per kilowatt hour for our electricity, but they're able to use that money to put efficiency measures into place, and so our overall electricity bills goes down total. But you're saying something similar on the food side of things, that local food costs a little bit more per pound, but yet still they find savings in the household because of the longer shelf life and because they were more careful with it?
In the higher yields, very often when you get stuff from California, you've got to peel away the first layer or two. And so the net yield per is a little bit lower. The other thing is sort of how people are using the food. Chicken maybe is a good example, is that if you get a mass-produced chicken that you kind of have a semi-disregard for, you know, you end up, maybe you roast it, you slice off the meat, and that's sort of the end of it. When you have a local chicken, I think you kind of value it differently, and as a result, you would take that carcass and make a soup out of it, or you know, do something else that would yield a second or third meal. I will say that when you start approaching the food that way, you are talking about generally a more significant time investment in your food. Mm-hmm. To eat better is going to take more time. But time can be a substitute for money. So if, you know, you don't need to have everything instant and pre-done for you, then I think there's an opportunity to eat well and eat locally.
Well, let's talk about the legal side of things, changes that may need to be made in Vermont law in order for more of us to be able to eat locally and for more economic development to take place around food. First, why don't we begin by telling the story of why the chicken couldn't cross the road and what you did about it.
Well, in 2006, a local friend and farmer was talking about how he was raising chickens and that it was processing them on the farm because it just wasn't sensical to take them to a state-certified place. It was 60 miles or more away, and he would bring 30 chickens and get 22 back without any real explanation of what happened to the other eight. And it took a lot of his time. It was expensive. It just didn't make sense in multiple ways.
So he got fewer chickens back from
the slaughterhouse? Yeah, he didn't always get the same number of chickens back.
Wow.
They would just say, well, it didn't pass inspection. Hmm. And he didn't have any control over that. And so
they say that, and this is just, you know, pure stuff you hear on TV, but they say that that cops have the best drugs. I wonder if inspectors have the best chickens.
They, as a practical matter, they started on-farm processing their own chickens, which, of course, was basically illegal. And they were selling these frozen chickens at a farmer's market. It's legal to do it and sell it at the farm stand, but the same processing, the same bird, couldn't be sold at a farmer's market or anyplace else. So they were selling it at a farmer's market in Montpelier. Somebody from the Department of Ag saw it. They said, hey, you can't do that. You got to stop. And he was telling me the story, and he said, you know, I can get around the law. I can sell it to you without saying anything. You don't say anything to anybody else. Nobody knows the difference. I can sort of keep them in the back of my truck at the farmer's markets, and with a wink and a nod, we go get it for somebody who is in the know. He said, but actually, I'm an upstanding guy. You know, my kids go to the public school. I volunteer on town boards. I pay my taxes. I don't really like slinking around, and that's not how I conduct the rest of my life. I am forced for financial reasons to do this around some of my agriculture. And as we talked through this, it just struck me as how fundamentally wrong the situation was, is that his name is Hadley Gaylord, that his chickens aren't what's wrong with American food. It's a lot about what is good and right about it, and I think its future. And so I said, you know, instead of doing this on the sly, why don't we do it overtly? And so it became known as the Chicken Event, a public act of civil disobedience in support of local agriculture. And out of that event, which it was a pretty powerful moment in the history of the company. There was a lot of pressure not to do it. We ended up with a compromise with the Department of Health where they helped facilitate a series of meetings to talk about the problem, which ended up getting kicked over to the state legislature, and out of which came changes in Vermont law that now allow farmers to on-farm process up to 1,000 chickens a year. They have to be identified as not being inspected, but they can be sold at farmers markets and in restaurants, which I think is a fabulous change. And the goal...
Are you required on your menu to say that it has not been inspected then?
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, it's full disclosure, it's full transparency was one of the things that we really honored and wanted to encourage. So, you know, I think chickens are in a better state. You know, the goal was to get more money into farmers' pockets. I think that is going to be the central, most important thing that we can do to have a more successful agriculture.
Okay, well, we're going to hear about more things that need to be done to meet that goal of getting more money into farmers' pockets. In just a minute, we'll be back with more talk with George Schenck right after this. Welcome back to Equal Time. I'm Carl Ettner. I'm here in the studio with George Schenck, the founder and CEO of American Flatbread, and we're talking about a new legal framework for Vermont food. George, you've just finished telling us a success story of how American Flatbread worked with the Gaylord Farm to create changes in the legislation so that on-farm slaughter of up to 1,000 chickens per year would be allowed with sales to restaurants and at farmers markets. But there's more to be done right now, right?
So from chickens, you start to imagine what we do about beef and pork and lamb and raw milk, frankly. And again, we have rules and regulations in place that were written probably 40, 45 years ago or so. And at the time, the intention was to protect public health. It had an unintended consequence of forcing out of business a lot of small processors and a lot of small farms, frankly. And I think we have to ask ourselves...
You say unintended. I just want to interject that USDA policy at that time was to force farmers out of business. From Earl Butts on...
Right. I mean, they didn't say it that way. But I know how you mean by saying that. And so I think we have to ask ourselves now, are those rules and regulations still serving us well? And if they're not, in a democratic society, these are our rules and regulations ultimately, and I think that we have the authority and the responsibility to affect change. And so what we're looking at is ways for farmers to on-farm process beef and pork and other red meats and sell them into the marketplace, whether it's at farmers markets or to restaurants and maybe even to grocery stores. And when you look at it carefully, what we see is that we currently have what I call a scale and time invariant control system. That is that regardless of how many cows or pigs that you do during the course of the year or what time of year you're doing it, the facilities requirements are essentially the same. And those facility requirements are really the barrier for a lot of small farmers to get into the business of on-farm processing. It's tens of thousands of dollars to build a facility that will meet the regulations. What's interesting to note is that if you're doing it on small scales, let's say 5 or 10 cows a year, or maybe 20 pigs a year, and if you're doing it during the cold time of the year, let's say from November to April, that a lot of the facility requirements really are not part of what protects the food in it from a public health point of view. So what we're exploring now is a new set of rules and regulations that are scale and time variant. That is that if there's a limited number of animals per year, sort of like with the chickens with 1,000 a year, I think it's less with large animals, that we have this variable time frame that you can do something from November to April with a minimum amount of facilities, and that the equipment requirements or facility requirements really could be quite minimal, that it could be done outdoors, for example, simply with a stainless steel table and access to potable water and hot water. And maybe the hot water is something as simple as hot water in a pail.
And the reason for November to April is because
you're outside
cold,
of fly season, you have sort of natural refrigeration going on outside. And that the reason for the smaller number of animals is that you're not re-exposing the same environment to the slaughtery process that over time, without the proper facilities, would make it impossible to clean. But, you know, if you're doing this outside with 5 animals in November, nature is going to clean it in a really satisfactory way. I think in order to be effective and responsible, that along in this sort of minimalistic requirements, that a best practices training would be appropriate for the farmers. So, and whether this takes the form of a pamphlet generated by UVM or the Department of Agriculture, or whether it takes the form of a 4 or 8 hour course where the farmers are exposed to good health practices. I think also that there needs to be transparency, that the farm name and contact information needs to be stated on the packaging, and that it needs to state that this meat was processed in an uninspected facility. And it certainly should include the town and state of origin so that people can make informed decisions about the local and regionalness of the food. And finally, that this kind of processing would be limited to in-state sales only.
So we're about out of time. So quickly, is there legislation now in the State House that would help bring all of this about?
The legislation is in process, so we'll see exactly how far we get. But I think that these are the kinds of ideas, along with others, whether it's a public investment in agricultural processing, education, and a new effort called Taste of Place, of creating a terroir or appellations here in Vermont to differentiate Vermont foods. And for us to end up with a better, stronger agriculture, we're going to need to take multiple approaches there.
George Schenck, founder and CEO of American Flatbread, food pioneer in Vermont, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So local food is more popular than ever. We've heard today how to convert your lawn to a garden or to help your local farmer put money in her or his pocket so they can feed you better. I'm Carl Etner, and that's just about it for today's Equal Time. Travin's in tomorrow. Anthony Polina will host on Wednesday and Thursday. I'll be back on next Monday. Don't forget to check EqualTimeRadio.com for podcasts of these shows and the ones that Travin hosts. Thanks to Artie Levine for our engineering today. Stay tuned for Jack Donovan. Thanks for tuning in.